are looking live at Chicken Dinner.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
I think I'll take two chickens.
Go on riverboat gambling trips.
You're going to die for some chickens.
Hey, what's your chicken dinner?
Someone is.
There was feathers yesterday. There was no chicken.
What you got riding on this game?
My daughter.
What a gambler.
It's Chicken Dinner.
Hey, Babalugas, we got a bet here.
Here's your host, Sam Panionovich.
It's called Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner right there, boys.
Let's get this thing going.
Winner, Winner, Chicken Dinner. How about that?
Away we go. Chicken Dinner Thursday, February 24th, 2022. Follow on Twitter at ChickenXDinner. DMs always open for you. And smash the button. You get this podcast whenever it drops. We will talk to Ben Brust, former Wisconsin Badger, ESPN radio host in Madison and Milwaukee. Ben loves to gamble on random shit, just like I do. Odd, even. Who knows? Ben will bet it. Buy or sell Purdue and Villanova. Ben's thoughts on Aaron Rodgers' next team odds. Those are very interesting numbers. And depending on where you look, the numbers are different. Most shops have him favored to stay in Green Bay, but Ben completely disagrees. We actually had this conversation before the Super Bowl, but almost all of it wasn't timely. So we bring that to you later on in the show, including a wild story about playing roulette at a casino mall overseas when Ben's playing basketball across the pond. Back from the Super Bowl, recharged, recalibrated, took a couple days off after Super Bowl Sunday. So I was off Monday and Tuesday, then flew back to Boston. And for those that have been able to sort of read between the lines and understand what's going on here, we are getting very, very close to launching a betting show at NESN. And there have been so many things that have had to take place over the last month or two. Endless meetings, auditions, things like that, graphics packages, and then going back and fixing everything and redoing it and repackaging things. So that has been sort of the last 2 or 3 months. So there have been weeks where this podcast hasn't really been possible to do, to write it, to voice it, edit it, all that, get the guests in order. So I hope to be sharing some big news soon on frequency and launch date. Can't do any of that yet, but just know that there will be a show in the very near future at NESN, which will be the first of its kind at the station. So that's very exciting stuff, and I'm happy to get into that when we can actually talk more in depth about it. But haven't had a chance to talk to you people since the Super Bowl. What a trip it was. Oh, the Friday night, the Saturday, Sunday, and actually I flew back Monday night, but I just want to take you quickly, if I can, through what it was like to watch the Super Bowl with our group. Now, it's myself, a group of about 14 of us, five of which bet on sports professionally and do it at a very high level and bet lots of money. I got a phone call, though, a few days before the Super Bowl from John Murray at the Westgate. We reserved the clubhouse down there in Vegas at the Superbook. And John says, hey, man, question for you. So what's up? He said, is there an issue? Would there be a problem if Tiki and Rondé Barber watched the game with you guys in the Superbook? I said, what? He said, well, yeah, I didn't know if that would be an issue. I said, John, of course we'll watch the game with the Barbers. In fact, I think that they will take a lot from that viewership because they do some work with the Westgate now, betting with the Barbers. A podcast on their fledgling media arm. And I said, yeah, of course we'll let the Barbers party with us. Why not? So we get in there Sunday. Game starts at 3:30 Pacific. I go into the clubhouse at about 1:45, 2 o'clock. And Rondé and Tiki and a couple of their crew members are there, and they're hanging out, and they have the booth right in front in the middle. And we set up sort of in the back near the corner. And then the servers come in and take some of our drink orders, and we get to the introductions. And, you know, I'm Sam, I'm Tiki, I'm Rondé, and we go around, and everybody meets each other. And it's very informal. It's very respectful. You know, we don't know them. They don't know us. And that all changes after the national anthem. As you can imagine, drinks are flying. I was doing double Jack and diets. I probably had about 14 of them in a six-hour window there. So as you can imagine, people start to loosen up and lighten up, and we're having a good time. So it gets to about the five-minute mark before the anthem. And Tiki and Rondé are getting more and more amazed and maybe disturbed at how much money the room has on the over for the national anthem. You know, they were thinking we were going to come in there and bet 100, 200. I had a guy in that room who had $20,000 on the national anthem over. So all of a sudden, the energy in the room starts to change when we get closer to the anthem. And it turns into sort of an orchestra because you have the guy on the stopwatch, the other guy backing up the guy on the stopwatch with the iPhone watch, and everybody's in position. So they bring out the color guard and all the flags are coming out to the field, and we're ready to go. The room has over 95 seconds all the way up to over 107 seconds. So that's a minute 35 up to a minute 47. We need over all those numbers. Bigger money on the lower numbers, but they kept piling on because, as we've learned over the last couple Super Bowls, the information gets out the Friday before the Super Bowl. It's like, hey, here are the rehearsal times. Minute 49, minute 50, minute 51, minute 51. So that thing got blasted all the way up, and then Warren Sharp released it to his clients. Whatever. The room needs the over. And you're sitting there watching a bunch of grown men scream through this anthem. And the anthem starts, and the stopwatch is on. And we get the updates constantly. 20 seconds. 30 seconds. 45. She's at a minute. Oh, fuck, she's flying. She's moving too fast. And then she got into a rhythm and a groove, and she got comfortable. And she made love to the microphone. Mickey Guyton, who was singing the anthem. And she starts holding these notes. And you get to the last part, which really dictates over or under. There are two words that decide whether the anthem is over or under. Free and brave. And when she got into the home stretch, she started to take her time, take the extra breath. And when she held free, this room exploded. And then before the final line, she takes that deep breath. It was a second and a half. She holds that breath. Let's fucking go. I wish you could have seen the looks on Rondé and Tiki's faces and their friends watching us watch the anthem. Because there's literally, I mean, there had to be $50,000 on the line in that room. And the anthem closes, I think the final number was a minute 49 or a minute 50. Just chaos. And Tiki Barber turns and looks at me and says, the game hasn't even started yet. I said, get ready. Because if you think that was some degenerate shit, wait till you meet my buddy Dan, who's got the longest punt over 55 and a half yards. He made like three bets on Sunday. One of them was longest punt over, 55.5. There were 12 punts in the game. Every time they punted, he stands up in the back of the room and yells, boom! 12 times. He's getting louder. The room is getting louder. Every punt, boom! Unfortunately, longest punt was 55 yards, so my man didn't win that bet. We had the total sack prop over 5.5. There were 9 sacks in the game. Every sack introduced a louder noise from the room. First half under, cash. Game under, cash. It was a good day for most people in there. And my buddy Dan Aspen had a bomb on the Rams' money line. So he was sweating that out the entire game because this looked like, honestly, a Joe Burrow party again. It looked like the Bengals were going to pull this off, but Stafford was unconscious on that final drive, and Cooper Kupp was the best player on the field. Well, either Cooper Kupp or Aaron Donald, depending on who you ask. Donald was great, but Kupp, I would argue, was better, especially down the stretch. Kupp scores the first touchdown. Dan loses it. Then they call it back for the conflicting penalties, right? A penalty on L.A., a penalty on Cincy, and Coop eventually scores from the one-yard line. So Dan wins that big bet. He laid minus 190, and people are like, well, why would he lay 190? Well, if he laid 3.5 or 4, he was a loser. He laid the money line. He wins the bet. Just a great weekend by all accounts, but watching that game, specifically watching the national anthem, with two former NFL players like Rondae Barber and Tiki Barber, and just witnessing their reaction to our degeneracy. It made the entire weekend. They couldn't believe how much money the room had on the national anthem over. We've seen some numbers now from the game. First three states to report: Nevada, a record handle, $179.8 million. The books won 15-4. New Jersey reported $143.7 million of handle. Books won 7-8. Remember, that New Jersey number is with New York Live. Illinois reported $60.5 million. Books won 9.5. We've got about five or six states now that have reported. The one state that really has nothing to show for it, though, is the state that I live in, Massachusetts. No handle, no revenue, no mercy. I actually tweeted this out the week after the Super Bowl and said, hey, $0 was wagered at Massachusetts sportsbooks. The books won absolutely nothing. The state made nothing. Everybody brought their money to Connecticut, New Hampshire, New York, Nevada, Rhode Island. A couple people big mad at this, including one person who said that sports betting would kill, and another person who compared sports betting to shooting heroin. Okay. I know people that live in the Boston area that either drove north to New Hampshire, southwest to Connecticut, south to Rhode Island, or got on a plane and flew to Vegas, because you still can't bet in this state, which is unbelievable. The Red Sox are partnering with DraftKings. This team is partnered with FanDuel. That team is partnered with MGM. The dollars are here. You listen to 98.5, the Sports Hub, and a lot of their stuff is sponsored by sportsbooks. Everybody is talking about it. We talk about it on NESN. I write about it. I podcast about it. We do TV hits about it. We have predictive game in Red Sox and Bruins broadcasts, but we still can't bet. The legal bookies, non-existent in Mass. The illegal bookies, loving it. Loving it. If you want to make a bet in the Boston area, you bet with a bookie. Or you drive to New Hampshire, Rhode Island. You're not going to make the drive to New York to lay down a bet. But I wanted to make a golf bet, which we'll get into later on in the show. I wanted to bet on Keith Mitchell to win the Honda Classic. And I'm thinking, I have to literally drive. The closest book to me is in New Hampshire, but that's 50 minutes. I don't have 50 minutes there and back in the middle of the week, especially on a Tuesday or Wednesday. I can't do it. So I make a phone call to Vegas and go, hey, can you make a bet for me and Mitchell? Yeah, give me 2 seconds. Bang, bang, done. Here's your ticket. I can't believe we still can't wager here. And people ask me all the time, when's it coming? I'm done guessing. When I started in December of 2020, I was told that we were going to be live by football season 21. That was the expert opinion, and I believed that opinion. I bought into it. I'm thinking, all right, well, you have to have it by football. You have to. Here we are, end of February 2022, over a year since I got here, and there is no finish line in sight. Okay. I want to wrap up the numbers on the bartender and Tree Bark Falafel. Remember, the bartender had Joe Burrow MVP and Bengals money line in the Super Bowl. Lost both of those, so he wraps up the season 24-27 on top of his number last year, 11-23. So he is 35-50 in two seasons betting the NFL. And I'll tell you what, this was sort of a square year in a lot of ways in the NFL. There were 4 or 5 weeks this season when the books were like, yeah, we got bludgeoned. If it's back to what the NFL is usually next year, he's going to be well under 500. So he was 12 games under 500 2 years ago. This past season, 3 games under 500. But the guy is still a squid. And he's going to lose more than he wins. And he's a very fun fade. Period. End of story. Tree Bark Falafel had the Rams -4. That missed extra point, 2-point conversion, whatever. The muffed hold cost him a push. Rams win by 3. So Tree Bark finishes the season 13-6. Very good season for him. And we move on to basketball and hopefully baseball eventually, and now hockey as well. That'll be the majority of the bets on this show. I know that we don't give out Bryant overs on the reg, but I don't know another sports betting program in the world that talks about them or tweets about them as much as we do here on Chicken Dinner, at Chicken X Dinner. Bulldogs have found their mojo. After not being able to hit an open shot early in the season and starting 6-3 to the under, these guys are flying. Bryant overs 12-4 in the last 16 games, and the numbers are just gaudy. 105-93, 99-88, 99-86, 89-82, 88-81, 85-68, 79-63, 84-81, 85-82. Flying up the fucking floor. 5-10 seconds off the shot clock, three ball. Which, in turn, causes the other team to speed up the pace. Bryant is also 9-2 against the spread in its last 11 games. So the overs hitting, Bryant hitting, and please, 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 let these guys win the Northeast Conference and make it into the tourney. I am begging. It'll be tough when Bryant faces Wagner. Wagner's very good, and they play lower and slower. Bryant wants to score 100 points. So that'll probably be the championship game, Bryant against Wagner. If Bryant makes the big dance, we will blast them to the moon in that 2-15 matchup, or the 3-14. Give me Bryant against Duke in the first round. Forget about it. Bryant will be getting 9.5, 10.5 points, maybe more. 11.5, 12 will be on Bryant, will be on the over, and we'll probably have some money line down on that game. I need them in this tournament. Last year, they went to the conference championship game and lost. This year, win the game, get into the dance, and let's make history in the first round. I need it. I need a 95-90 first round game like you can't believe. The boys will be well endowed on Bryant, that's for sure. There's a new litmus test going around right now on how respected you are as a bettor. You can actually go and try this out if you want. Go try and make a bet on the Baltimore Orioles to win the AL East. And you will learn exactly how respected you are. There's a cat I follow on Twitter named Gotronica. Real sharp guy. At Gotronica. Spelled the same way it is in the Bible. He tweeted a bet slip at DraftKings. He tried to bet $100 on the Orioles to win the East at 150-1. 100 to win 15,000. Odds are good. That's a bad bet. And you're lighting a Benjamin Franklin on fire. But that's not the point. Gotronica wants to bet 100. He should be allowed to do so. DraftKings decided that was way too rich for their blood. But they'll give him 17 cents. That's right. You can't bet 100. We will give you 17 cents to win $25.67. It's a joke. It is a joke. If you want to make that $100 parlay bet, though, on an 8-teamer, hey, red carpet's going to unroll itself for you. You can do whatever you want. You want to make a 2-team parlay, 14 parlay, 10-team parlay, 12-team parlay, 18-team parlay, 30-leg parlay, whatever. You bet whatever you want. But we won't let you bet 100 on the Orioles at 150-1. Cowardly bookmaking. As Spanky says, dressmaking. It's not bookmaking. They're not booking bets. 17 cents. So go try and put in a bet on Baltimore. Try and bet 25 at 150-1 and see if it gets through. That will tell you more than you need to know. Eilers and Krejcik released the 2021 U.S. sports betting gross gaming revenue numbers. This is market share. I was surprised to see how big FanDuel's share was. So they take all the revenue from all the books across this country and put them in order. FanDuel has 36% of the American market in the USA last year. 36% FanDuel. Clear number one. Number two, DraftKings, 24% of the market. 3, BetMGM, 15%. 4, Caesars, 7%. Tied for 5th, the following 3, BetRivers, Barstool, PointsBet, 4%. All the other books combined, 6%. And I'll tell you, that Caesars number is a little bit lower than it probably is now, because Caesars went all in on the marketing and the spend and the acquisition right around August, getting ready for football. And they spent millions of dollars with J.B. Smoove and the Mannings and getting the Caesars brand out there. So I think that Caesars number, if you were to say, all right, take the January and February 2022 numbers, I imagine Caesars would be higher than 7%. But this is the full calendar year, last year, January to December. FanDuel, DraftKings, BetMGM, then a line, then Caesars, BetRivers, Barstool, PointsBet, everybody else. Consolidation is coming, boys and girls. It is. We're seeing WynnBET reportedly for sale. Twin Spires no longer taking bets for their sports book very soon. They're going to be racing only. How can you, if you're only getting 4% of the market and spending God knows what to acquire customers, and you're only taking 4%? What was wagered last year? $51 billion, right? Didn't I see that from Ryan Butler a couple weeks ago? Americans wagered, oh, that was on the Super Bowl, actually. Or what? No, that was. That was all of 2021. Americans wagered $51 billion. So if you're getting 4% or less, that's not sustainable. You're not churning butter and making money over time. And I'm telling you, we loved the era when we could have 8 or 9 or 10 apps in a state like Illinois or New Jersey, and we could bet all these different prices, but that is going to come down. The big fish are going to eat the little fish. These little books, and they're not little, they're just not generating revenue and profit. They have to be bought out. PointsBet is a perfect example. Good app, nice software. Somebody's going to buy them out. But I was amazed to see FanDuel had 36% of the market in 2021. Last thing before we get to Ben Brust. Going to start dabbling in some golf here. We'll see how it goes. I talked to a lot of people that bet golf very well. James Mazzola, Matt Eumanns, Wes Reynolds. Jeff Davis is a very strong resource behind the counter at Circa. Mike Cole here at Nesson. They're all very good at betting golf. And the info I have on golf is always pretty good, but I never have given out a golf pick on Chicken Dinner. In 5 years, I've never once given out a pick. I decided this weekend at the Honda Classic, if you saw the tweet, a lot of people were like, oh, Buck? Surprising to see Chicken Dinner give out Keith Mitchell, +3.25, top 10, +3,500 to win the Honda outright. We liked his form, made 4 out of 5 cuts, won this tournament in 2019, and I thought it was very interesting to see Circa, a very sharp golf book, have Mitchell on the close at 27-1 when other books were 33, 34, 35-1. So we decided to make a couple pops. One unit each, Mitchell top 10, Mitchell to win outright. And away we go in the golf season. Joining us again on Chicken Dinner, we're going to talk a lot of college basketball with Ben Brust, co-host of Scalzo and Brust on ESPN Radio in Milwaukee and in Madison. And Ben's got some stories about losing on some degenerate shit as well, like my snowfall bet. What's up, Ben? Welcome back.
Oh, geez. Yeah, snowfall. I'll leave it to you to see if I'll one-up you on my story.
The best is that I told you the wager I lost. I went under 19.5 inches in a blizzard out here in Boston, or I guess they call it a nor'easter. You didn't even seem surprised that I, A, gambled on it, and B, lost on it.
I had been following that because my co-host is from Boston, and he's big on betting under – not actually betting, but the amount of times I've heard him be like, yeah, okay, cool, 8 inches, show me. You know, like, it's always under. And so, like, it was funny that you had said that, and I was like, ah, I'm pretty sure that one went over. And I actually, when you said it, I was like, ah, That's a bet that my co-host from Boston would probably make if he knew existed, because he's anti weather people and their overestimates of snowstorms just to scare us to make them feel like they have something to cover. But this one was legit.
Yeah, the Boston Globe essentially said on Friday morning, you're all going to die because of this snowstorm. And then I'm like, you know what? I'm going to make a number, throw
under
it out there. Yeah, because they're forecasting, I think it was 18 to 26 inches, which is also fascinating. That'd be like me saying the Packers are going to win by 7 or they're going to win by 20. You can't have 18
you
and 26.
A massive range. Yeah, like, okay. And the best part is they get these big ranges and they're still wrong most of the time.
So what did you gamble on that was wild?
So speaking of my co-host, Greg Scalzo, him and I had the opportunity to go to the Masters, and like idiots, we booked an early flight out Saturday morning. We were there like Thursday morning through Saturday morning. Getting from Augusta to Atlanta is probably 2.5-3 hours, I want to say. And we had an early Atlanta flight, so we had to get up at like 3 a.m. He stayed out. I mean, we've been at, like, after it all day at a wonderful hospitality tent due to our good friends at Intersport. And he ended up keep going. I was like, all right, I'm just going to bite the bullet, get like 3-4 hours of sleep, and then I'll drive us to Atlanta in the rental car. And in order for me to like stay up, I mean, I was white knuckle. It's pitch black out. Like no lights anywhere. And I don't know where I am. I'm in the middle of Atlanta, in the middle of Georgia. And so he pulls up. We had a dual betting account, which was a horrible idea. We never went on it. But the only good news is you split the losses. He pulled up. Over or under the Boston Lottery, total numbers added up to 100.
Oh man!
And yeah, we took the under and that went over, and we also did the New York Lottery. We took the over that went under, and then we got into some Japanese baseball. We live bet something, and I know we won that because we had something to celebrate. But what kind of idiot bets the lottery over under on numbers drawn? Like, come on. Like at least you in the snow, like, had some historical, like, reference of weather people and meteorologists overestimating the lottery. Like, come on.
I had a buddy that was down bad. And let's not, it wasn't tens of thousands of dollars, but when you're 20 years old, 21 years old, a couple grand's a lot of money, especially when you're in college and you're not working. He was down so bad after one of these Super Bowls. I want to say it was, $3,800, and he didn't have $380.
Yep.
And what he did was he flipped a coin and ended up betting $2,500 on whether the Dow Jones would be odd or even the following morning, because it was the only thing left on the site. So imagine you're the bookie and you're doing your figures on Super Bowl Sunday like they often do, and they're writing who's up and who's up or down by how much. And I think this guy's break-even figure, the settle figure, was plus or minus 2,000. The book had to look at that and go, wait a minute. He was down 3,800. Oh my God! He bet $2,500 on odd for the Dow Jones, and he won.
Did he hit it?
He hit it. He survived that weekend. But if you're the book, you got to keep that guy.
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, I should be a bookie's best friend. Like, they should treat me to like the same way that they do in Vegas. Like, take me out to dinner. I'm not saying offer me a hotel, but like treat me well, and I'll keep coming back. I'll keep being stupid, and I'll be your best friend. In a way that I don't want to be your best friend.
How much fun did you have all last week after the entire state of Wisconsin couldn't stop protecting old boy, number 12, Aaron Rodgers?
You know, the reaction was actually crazy to me, because it was what I hoped would not happen, and that he was protected by the special teams. Anyone with a brain would know that if your defense gives up 0 points, and even if the special teams is worse than the league and they give up 10 points and you lose to Jimmy Garoppolo at home as the number one seed, as the probably presumptuous four-time MVP, you have to take the freaking blame. And if it wasn't for a leading question to Aaron about taking blame, he probably wouldn't have even took blame. So like, there was no escaping Aaron Rodgers with the blame for that loss. I don't care what anyone says. The special teams were trash all year. You had 5-3 and outs. And yes, the San Francisco defense is good, but this is a year where we got two number four seeds in the Super Bowl. Like, there's parity this year. And you're coming off a season where you had the number one offense. It's always been, oh, he needs the defense. Defense put up 0 points. I don't care about the special teams. You put up 10 points, 10 at home at Lambeau Field. He referenced that in 2019 in the NFC Championship game. It would be nice to have one of these at home. It just, the excuse making is nonstop. And I'm over it. I'm done with it. I'm done with the narrative spins. And I'm just kind of just done with him.
PointsBet has a market up right now. Aaron Rodgers will play his next snap for X. Green Bay's the favorite, -225. Denver, +180. Pittsburgh, 5-1. Miami, 14-1. Las Vegas, 14-1. What's your reaction to that?
Shocking that it's pretty high in terms of like the money line for him to come back to Green Bay. I don't know. They're in salary cap hell. And he's built in this rebuild excuse, you know, even after the Super Bowl and then his Pat McAfee media day on Tuesday, not after the Super Bowl, after where he should have been, after the divisional round, he said it, after his Pat McAfee show interviews talking about, like, I don't want to be a part of a rebuild. Well, Nathaniel Hackett, the offensive coordinator, is gone. Quarterbacks coach Luke Getsy's gone. He's got a great relationship with LaFleur. But, like, I feel like with everything that happened last offseason, it was almost like a buildup to his excuse to not have to come back. Now, yes, did he compliment Gutekunst and, you know, some of the things that he changed and whatnot? Sure. But sooner or later, when you're at a place for as long as he has and, like, now hasn't been able to deliver since 2010 season, 11 playoff year in that Super Bowl, change is just like what you need. And so my vibe is from Aaron, he wants out and they're in salary cap hell. How are they if he's not able to get it done this year, why in his mind would he think, all right, well, we're not going to have as good of a roster next year? And I'm no capologist, I'm no cap specialist here, but it's hard for me to imagine that Davante Adams and Aaron Rodgers are both able to come back and then field a team as good as they had it this year and have as easy of a path as they ever had to a Super Bowl than what they had this year, as we see the Rams and the freaking Bengals in there. And it's just like, I'm shocked that the value is favored in Green Bay's way. And that makes me feel really bad because I placed a emotional bet with a different host on our station. I said 5-1 odds Aaron Rodgers is gone, so I only get 100, he gets 500 if Aaron comes back.
Oh yeah, you dealt the wrong end of that one. So -225 implies a 69% chance that he stays. I think that's too high. Tend to agree with you on that number. I don't know what points bet's going to do if he retires. I imagine that they're just going to refund all the bets, but I'll tell you what, man, I had several bookies in Vegas last year tell me if he leaves, he is built to play in Denver. The way that the staff is built, the way that the roster is built, specifically the defense is good. They have literally a top 10 roster and a bottom 5 quarterback group.
Yeah, it is the destination. Now Nathaniel Hackett, his offensive coordinator from Green Bay, is the head coach, so it would make sense from that standpoint that if he does want to, you know, go somewhere different, if Denver is the place. He was golfing with Elway last year. You know, they have some weapons, you know, no Davante Adams weapons, but ones that, look, Aaron Rodgers is going to elevate whoever's out there with him. He just has to find that one guy who clicks on to his rapport and he'll stick to you like glue, and that will carry you through the regular season. Now, he targeted Davante Adams and Aaron Jones literally every single ball he threw against San Francisco and couldn't look any other way. Even reverted to looking like Brett Favre throwing up a double coverage jump ball to Davante Adams when think of it this way. Two white jerseys on one green jersey, one white jersey on two green jerseys. Lazard or Equanimeous St. Brown would have been open, and he just got locked into Devontae. It looked like the Aaron Rodgers of 2019 who said he needed a home game in one of these. And so, I'm out of excuses for him. Yeah, sure, he gives you, as a Green Bay Packer fan, he's going to give you the best chance to be relevant, be in the conversation. But it's been 11 years now, and everyone's made every excuse for him. I think he wants to move on.
I don't know if it's just me. Maybe you feel the same way. But every time I see Purdue in the top 10, and now this season they've been in the top 5 and all that, I'm just built to not buy that. I don't know why that is. I mean, you played against Purdue for years in your career at Wisconsin. I just can't buy them at 2-1 to make the Final Four and 10-1 to win the national championship. Maybe they are that good, but I can't buy it yet. I'm not drinking that Kool-Aid.
Dude, I want to buy it. I literally, before the season started, I would have wanted to bet the entire world on Purdue because of the two bigs that they have, and the versatility that the two bigs bring. Jaden Ivey is one of the most explosive, one of the more fun players to watch in college basketball. They have a shooter in Stefanovic. They have a senior guard in Eric Hunter. Mason Gillis, Brandon New. They have all these freaking pieces. I can name them off. I'm like, oh my gosh, they're really good. Matt Painter's a good coach. I believe in him. This is the year that they can finally just prove that Purdue isn't going to Purdue when Purdue has high expectations. But they blew a 20-point lead. I watched it against Ohio State, and they did end up pulling it off with a Jaden Ivey last-second three. But, a top-five team, as explosive as Purdue can be, should, continue to just pile on against Ohio State and win that one, 90-65, and Ohio State quits. But they just Purdued. They continued to give Ohio State hope and didn't put them away. That's a game where if it's Purdue -7 against Ohio State, you should be just salivating because Mackey is so hard to play at, and they blew a 20-point lead. And I don't know if that's the lack of killer instinct. I don't know if that's the lack of we haven't been to Final Four in God knows how long, and we know we have expectations. But I guess tread lightly because every reason would have been I'd jump all over Purdue, and they're giving me every reason to stay trepidatious.
If I said to you, all right, Ben, I'll give you these two bets or these two options. Purdue either goes to the Final Four or they lose in the opening weekend to Weber State, the 15, or Iona, the 10. Would you take the long road or the short? Okay, Final Four. All right, that was simple.
Yeah, Final Four. This is in Michigan State versus Middle Tennessee State. This is a much, much better Purdue team.
They're plus 250 to make the Final Four right now. That sounds like something you'd be interested in.
No, I'm in the middle of your Final Four and first round exit. I just don't trust them enough to only get plus 250 for a team that has not done it before. When I say not done it before, since, Katie.
How about Villanova to make the Final Four? 4-1.
Ooh, that's intriguing. I love Jay Wright a lot. I don't know if I believe in Gillespie like I believed in his old guards. That Villanova run, sorry, can I reminisce for a sec?
Sure.
That team was fucking unbelievable.
Yeah.
The Brunson team, and they had Paschal, and they had I'm blanking on the two guards. They covered every single game in the tournament, and they beat the doors out of Kansas. And there's just one team where there's been twice now that I've hit it. Last year, Baylor. This one. I had Baylor early, often, and bet them the entire way. Villanova in 16 or 17, whichever, they literally won every game by double digits except West Virginia, I believe, but they still covered. Just routed everyone. Love that team. I don't know how I got on that tangent, but I don't know if I buy 4-1. I buy Gonzaga. I do. I think what you're seeing now in college basketball is the teams that show that they're consistently good. It's not as wacky as people think. Like, the best teams are making it to the Final Four. There's a reason why Gonzaga and Baylor were in the championship. I think back to UNC Gonzaga, right? Like, more often than not, you're seeing the best teams make it. Even in these one and done mirror. Yeah, it's sure. It's fun to see the upsets in the first three rounds, I would say. But once you get to the Elite Eight, the best team usually wins. And I don't see Villanova part of that crew.
Phil Booth, Jalen Brunson, Eric Paschal, Michael Bridges, Amari Spellman. That was the starting five.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Mikal Bridges didn't miss a corner three ever. It was automatic. He was unreal.
But how does that team stack up against Kaminsky, Decker, Jackson, Gasser, Brust with Hayes off the bench?
Oh, that team was better than a 14 team. I think the 15 team that beat Kentucky was definitely better than that team, though.
I still can't – I mean, I don't mean to kick dirt on the grave, but I still can't believe Aaron Harrison hit a 27-footer to beat you guys in the Final Four.
Yeah, no, it's all right. It's how my college career ended. Let's reminisce about some fun, happy things. Yeah, look, Kentucky was 0-for-4 from three. I was on the weak side, and he shot a three, and I said, this is what happened in my head. I said, I'm going to get the fucking rebound on the weak side. I'm going to get a foul. I'm making both, and we're going to the championship. And UConn was an 8 seed, and I felt good about that, right? Like, we were a 2 seed, and UConn fucking somehow won that national championship.
With Kevin Olley.
I can't, nothing I can say anymore. I mean, I still am probably, I'll be in denial my whole life. I'll never accept that.
I need your best story from playing in Lithuania. And you guys played some doozies. You played in Latvia. Didn't you guys play in like Estonia or something like that?
Latvia, Estonia, Finland. Look, Lithuania is a, yeah, Lithuania is a really good league. Like, they love basketball. And I was on a team that finished 4th out of 11th in the top league as a low-budget team. The other three teams were in Euro Cup and Euro League, you know, and the idea is if you do well, you work your way up into those leagues. And I went for the resume to help booster that, even though I quit playing overseas after that year because I was like, fuck this. I don't care if it's Lithuania or Spain or Italy. Like, the lifestyle doesn't change. I don't want to be alone going country to country, you know, doing 2 days. And I love the US and A. All I did overseas was gamble. I went to the casino in the mall. My best story, I guess, would be gambling away all of the money that I made overseas at the casino mall on roulette, and then smoking my first cigarette from two guys that walked out, and I bummed one from them, and I was just like, this is definitely going from flying on private planes across, you know, the United States. I flew on U2's plane. I flew to Dallas, you know, in the Final Four, played in front of 80,000 people, to busing around a country with less people than the city of Chicago where I'm from. And I was just like, I was just in hell. And so, God, I love America.
All that money, all those private planes, but they couldn't pay the players, huh?
Couldn't pay the players. Instead, I just, you know, worked really hard for my really minimal salary a month and put it on black.
He's the co-host of Scalzo and Brust on ESPN Milwaukee and ESPN Madison. Ben Brust, please follow on Twitter at Ben Brust. I look forward to the next tip that I can share with you about Illinois, whether it's Kofi or Curbelo. Just wake up at 1 in the morning when I send you one, okay?
Yeah, I'll have to put you on, like, the alert where, like, it's like an alarm when you text me.
You know it's good when it comes through. You're like, did you text me at like 2 in the morning when you were up the other night? I said yes.
I think I just texted you at 7 a.m. I was like, it's in. That's what she said.
Thanks, Ben.
All right, Sam.
That about does it for Chicken Dinner. Thanks to Ben Brust for hopping on the show. Record check 223, 226, and 8. Down 3.3. We did lose a little bit on the Super Bowl. 2-3. Had the first quarter under. That was a loser. Tie at half. Very close, but a loser. Longest field goal over. That was a loser. Did win the first half under plus money. And the Rams to have the ball more possession at minus a quarter. And we've got Keith Mitchell, top 10, and to win the Honda outright. Let's go.
Coming up on Chicken Dinner, we're going to do the next episode next week. So only one for this week. Richard Schutz will join the show, longtime casino executive and gaming consultant. The stories are endless. He's been everywhere. He knows everyone, and he worked in some of the biggest books in the world, including the Stardust in Las Vegas. Cash some tickets, make some money. Let's go, Keith Mitchell. We'll talk to you next week right here on Chicken Dinner. Broken dreams held together with